ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Today we are reading from Canto 5, Chapter 18. The residents of Jambudweep offer prayers. And this is text number 27. Ekurdvipadas chatuspada Sarishripam stanu yaratra drishyate Yam loka pala kila matsara jvara Pitvaya tanto pi pritaksamecha cha Yam who, whom, you, loka pala The great leaders of the universe, beginning with Lord Brahma. Kila, what to speak of others? Matsarya Jvara, who are suffering from the fever of envy. Hitva, leaving aside. Yatanta, endeavoring. Api, although, Pritak, separately, Sametya, combined, Cha, also, Patum, to protect, Na, not, Seku, able, Dvipada, two-legged, Chatupada, four-legged, Sarishripam, reptiles, Stanu, not moving, Yat, whatever, Atra, within this material world, Drishyate, is visible. Translation by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. My Lord, from the great leaders of the universe, such as Lord Brahma and other demigods, down to the political leaders of this world, all are envious of your authority. Without your help, however, they could neither separately nor concertedly maintain the innumerable living entities within the universe. You are actually the only maintainer of all living beings, of animals like cows and asses, and of plants, reptiles, birds, mountains, and whatever else is visible within this material world. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. It is fashionable for materialistic persons to compete with the power of God. When so-called scientists try to manufacture living entities in their laboratories, their only purpose is to defy the talent and ability of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is called illusion. It exists even in the higher planetary systems, where great demigods like Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, and others reside. In this world, everyone is puffed up with false prestige, despite the failure of all their endeavors. When so-called philanthropists, who supposedly want to help the poor, are approached by members of the Krishna consciousness movement, they say, "You are simply wasting your time, while I am feeding vast masses of starving people." Unfortunately, their meager efforts, either singly or together, do not solve anyone's problems. Sometimes so-called swamis are very eager to feed poor people thinking them to be Dharija Narayan, the Lord's incarnation as beggars. They prefer to serve the manufactured Dharija Narayana than the original Supreme Narayan. They say, don't encourage service to Lord Narayan. It is better to serve the starving people of the world. Unfortunately, such materialists, either singly or combinedly in the form of the United Nations, cannot fulfill their plans. The truth is that the many millions of human beings, animals, birds, and trees, indeed all living entities, are maintained solely by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Eko bahunam yo vididati kaman. One person, the Supreme Lord, is supplying the necessities of life for all other living entities. To challenge the authority of Narayan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is the business of asuras, demons. Yet sometimes suras or devotees are also bewildered by the illusory energy and falsely claim to be the maintainer of the entire universe. Such incidents are described in the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, where Sukadeva Goswami tells how Lord Brahma and King Indra became puffed up and were eventually chastised by Krishna. Om agena timarandasya gananjana salakaya chaksurun militam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha shri chaitanya manobishtam stapitam yena bhutale svayam rupa kadamayam dadati svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Uta Parakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagarjatam Sahagana Raganatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Sadvadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitamscha Hey Krishna Karana Sindhu Dinabando Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gorange Radhe Vrindavaneshwade Vrishavanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpa Tarubhyastra Kripa Sindhubhye Vacha Patitana Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Nama Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Radhar Shivasari Gorabhat Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So we'll read this verse once more. This is text 27, chapter 18, canto 5. My Lord, from the great leaders of the universe, such as Lord Brahma and other demigods, down to the political leaders of this world, all are envious of your authority. Without your help, however, they could neither separately nor concertedly maintain the innumerable living entities within the universe. You are actually the only maintainer of all human beings, of animals like cows and asses, and of plants, reptiles, birds, mountains, and whatever else is visible within this material world. So this is a continuation of the prayers of Vaivaswata Manu. Vaivaswata Manu resides on Avarsha, which is part of the Jambudvip. His Varsha is called Ramyaka, Varsha. And there he worships Matsya Avatar, the very first of Krishna's 10 incarnations. And this Vaivaswata Manu, he is one of 14 Manus who populate each day of Lord Brahma. Each day of Lord Brahma has 14 Manus, and he is the seventh, and he is actually the Manu who is now our Manu. He is referred to in Bhagavad Gita. Krishna says that in the fourth chapter, he tells Arjuna that originally he spoke this knowledge, Bhagavad Gita, to Vivaswan, the sun god, and Vivaswan spoke it to his son, Manu, and that's Vaivaswata Manu. Vaivaswata Manu is the son of the sun god, Vivaswan. And then Vaivaswata Manu in turn spoke it to his son, Ikshvaku. So in that way, Krishna established the parampara, evam parampara praptam. But in course of time, due to unscrupulous persons, That parampara was lost, so Krishna re-established it by speaking Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna. But this is a very exalted personality, Vaivasvata Manu. It's described that he rules during one day of Brahma, and it's for the yugas revolve. There's 4,327,000 years, and that number times 71 is the length of Vaivasvata Manu's rule. Each Manu rules for that time, including Vaivasvata. And his rule is very special because the yugas that ordinarily come, Satya Yuga, Dwapara Yuga, Treta Yuga, and Kali Yuga, in this particular millennium, those orders of the different yugas are mixed because Lord Krishna appears in Dwapara Yuga. So it goes Satya, Treta, Dwapara, and Kali. And after Lord Krishna's appearance is the appearance of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And those two appearances happen just once in the day of Brahma. So they happen during the reign of this present Manu, Vaivasvata Manu. He was privileged in that way. And at the beginning of his reign, there was a great inundation. And he was actually saved by Matsya Avatar. So therefore, in this Ramyaka Keli, Varsha, he worships Matsya Avatar with beautiful prayers, and we're reading those now. Previously he explained, I guess what you read perhaps last week, because you read the Bhagavatam, in the midst of reading Chaitanya Charitamrita and the Bhakti Vaibhava. So in the last verse he explained how the Lord is the controller of everything, and he is also the maintainer of everyone. And he explained that self-realization means that we must understand our subordinate position to the Lord. This is the meaning of self-realization. So there's so many beautiful points he makes here, especially this word, Matsyarajvara. Matsyarajvara means those who are suffering from the fever of envy. Those who are suffering from the fever of envy. And in fact, we know that conditioned souls suffer from this fever. It's one of the enemies of the mind. It's described that there's lust, greed, anger, pride, or madness, illusion, and envy. These are the six enemies of the mind. Kama, Krodha, Lobha, Madha, Moha, and Matsarya. So, it's not just the leaders, Lord Brahma and other demigods, but also the political leaders of this planet. And in fact, every conditioned soul is beset with these enemies of the mind. Envy means a feeling of discontentment or resentfulness about the possessions or the abilities of another. It's a disease. And it's a disease that is very practical for us, first of all, to recognize it, to understand where it comes from, where does envy come from. Ultimately, we can look at another and feel envy and think we're envious of that individual. But in fact, whatever attributes, possessions, abilities, talents that person has, ultimately is due to their karma, their good karma. And karma is controlled, ultimately, it's one of the laws of the universe, and ultimately it's controlled by Krishna, it's his law. So if we want to look at the source of envy, what we're envious of, in the final analysis, we're envious of God, of Krishna, because he has given that individual whatever it is they have that we feel envious of, that we're discontent or resentful that they have it. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in speaking for the conditioned souls, he says that when I see another person is happy, then I become miserable. And when I see another person is miserable, then I become very happy. So this is the nature of envy. And it's actually very ironic if you look at envy. objectively, because what ultimately we want as spiritual beings is happiness. That's our nature, is to be happy, Ananda. And the very nature of being envious means that we're unhappy, we're discontent, we're resentful. So just, we think, oh, I'll acquire this possession that person has, this ability, this quality, and then I'll be happy. This is why I want to have it. They have a nice house, they have a nice family, they have this talent, they're very good in school, they're popular, they're beautiful, they're famous, they have, you know, whatever it is that we desire, we see it in someone else. And we become envious and think, if I could get that thing or those things, then I would be happy. But the fact is that the envy itself makes us unhappy. And also the fact is that if we look at people who have those opulences, they're not necessarily happy. You can watch people who are, just read any paper anywhere in the world and all the difficulties that people who have various opulences encounter. Relationship difficulties are very prominent. Fears of losing what they have, being discovered for cheating, it's just endless. So if we look at it rationally, envy is not only useless but very detrimental to us. And yet still we're envious. This is a problem. This is a very serious problem. What to do? So fortunately, Srila Prabhupada has given us the path to become free of these six enemies. He describes something we were very surprised to read in the 10th canto, that these six enemies that accompany the mind also, that I mentioned, kama, krodha, lobha, moha, matsarya, madha, they are described as symbolically the six sons of Devaki who were killed before Krishna's appearance. And Devaki is described symbolically as bhakti. And Devaki was constantly in fear of Kamsa. So this fear is actually purifying. By this fear of material consciousness, of being absorbed in material desires, we can begin to destroy these six enemies that are always with us. And we should never think of ourselves as victorious in this procedure, because these enemies are described like a snake. And for those who know venomous snakes, one never can trust them. So similarly, we can never trust the mind to become completely cleansed of these six enemies that are with us always. We always must be vigilant to recognize them and defeat them. Just as Devaki was always fearful of Kamsa. And when these six enemies were killed, they were also the six sons of Marichi, who first appeared within her womb, then it was a place where Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, could appear from her womb. So the womb of bhakti is prepared by this fear of these enemies, and that gives facility, or the space, that cleanses the situation, so Lord Krishna finds it a fit place to reside and to appear from. So that's one aspect. Another aspect, again, this is perhaps analytical, and perhaps it's not the cure for envy, but certainly to analyze it helps. So if we analyze, we can see that whatever it is we're envious of, that person has it because of their karma. So with humility, we realize that this is not my lot in life at present, to have this ability, to have this possession, that my karma is different. And with that in mind, we can be content with what we have, that there are no accidents. The Lord has made this arrangement, and it is just suitable for me. And one of the detriments, perhaps, of Western civilization is that we're constantly comparing ourselves to others, which gives rise naturally to envy. And also a feeling of superiority for those that we have, you know, there are people that will have less than us, so we can feel proud. of ourselves because they have less. And those who have more than us, and then we can feel envious and dissatisfied because they have more. So this comparison is very detrimental. In a traditional culture, in India, you will see that people will refrain from this comparison and just be content with what they have. This is proper culture. It's very unfortunate, this competition and comparison. If we're going to compete, we can compete against ourselves. Why do we have to compare ourselves to our neighbors and become either proud or resentful and discontent? So it's a lack of culture. So with humility, we accept our fate. We see it as ordained by Krishna, not an accident. There was a saying by Confucius, the famous Chinese philosopher. He said, "Don't be envious of what fate has given others." So fate ultimately is Krishna, providence. And whatever they have is due to them. So with that idea, with this humility and contentment, if we become absorbed in whatever service it is that we've been given by the grace of Srila Prabhupada, and focus on that and do that to the very best of our ability, not only does that absorb our minds so that we have less time to be distracted by these enemies of ours, but also it purifies us and cleanses the heart, which is above these intellectual, analytical examinations of the source of envy and the cause of envy. So it's a glorious thing, a purifying process that will not only free us from envy, this matsara jvara, but also all the other enemies that we have, and bring us actually to the lotus feet of Krishna, where we can be satisfied. So it's a process that requires both enthusiasm to pursue it and patience in the process of pursuing it, and confidence that yes, we will get there. We just must give it our attention, our concerted, regular, daily effort, associating with people who have the same motivation and goal in mind, and then gradually the result will be there. So those are a few points. Oh, another point is that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is supremely unique. There's no one like him. And we are his parts and parcels. So we are also unique. Each and every one of us is unique. Just like even materially they say, I don't know how they came to this conclusion, but they say that every snowflake is unique. There are no two snowflakes alike. But anyway, whether that's true or not, each and every individual, each and every Atma is unique and has its unique relationship with the Lord. So as we explore that, our own unique contribution to the Lord's service, we can take great joy in that. It's very much like if there's a very large garden and many, many gardeners, and each gardener has a little patch that they're responsible for, fertilizing the soil and getting the weeds out and planting and watering and finally harvesting. So we do that. That's our personal offering to the Lord. Meanwhile, we're surrounded by so many other gardeners, and their garden may be different from ours. It may appear in some ways better than ours. But that does not mean we have to begrudge them of that. Rather, we can take pleasure in that. That's the mood of a devotee, to take pleasure in the success of others, other devotees, and also to try to help them in any way we can. Not that we try to thwart them or stop them, but rather we try to assist them, because we are the servant of the servant of the servant of the servant. And that actually gives us great pleasure. Prabhupada mentions in this purport about altruists, philanthropists, who try to help people by feeding them. They think, oh, they're poor Narayan, Daridra Narayan, so let me feed them. But this is not actually the solution to poverty or hunger. We must find the actual center. The actual center is Krishna. And when we please him, then his parts and parcels become pleased. Just like watering the root of the tree then the flowers of the tree, the fruit of the tree, the branches, the twigs, they all become nourished. So similarly, if we can please Krishna by our devotion, by our feelings of service to him, then we can please his creation. And this is actually the solution. He says here, the truth is that nothing can be solved by these material attempts. Nothing can be solved by these material attempts. It is only like a band-aid on the actual problem. The actual problem is our ignorance of our identity and our forgetfulness of the Supreme Person who has created this material world and is maintaining it and at one point will annihilate it. And we are completely dependent on him. Completely dependent on him. So when we realize that and function in our role as dependent servants, we personally experience joy, and then we can help give that to others as a service to Srila Prabhupada. So maybe there's some points of discussion on this verse. Well, we have quite a bit of time. Are there some points of discussion on envy? Yes? Where should we start to become a happy devotee?
What is it that doesn't make us happy? Why is it so much aggression about devotees? Is it maybe because of the issues of what the devotees could be good, or is it anything about this
question? So the question is, why is there unhappiness amongst devotees? Why is there a lack of joy sometimes amongst devotees? So it begins personally. That is the personal understanding that I am not this body. I'm a spiritual being, that whatever happens to this body and the mind are not actually happening to me. I'm beyond that. I'm transcendental to whatever happens to this body and mind. So when we begin with that solid foundation, then personally, whatever happens externally, we can experience pleasure. We see that in Srila Prabhupada's own life, that while he was developing this Krishna consciousness movement, there were so many challenges that he had. One enormous challenge was this Hare Krishna land in Juhu, which is just outside Bombay, that he put money down for this property in good faith, and the person who was selling the property took the money and then tried to take the land back as well. And this became a legal battle that went on for years, literally years. And at one point it turned out that our lawyer was in cahoots with the lawyer of this man that had sold the land. The two lawyers were working together. Instead of working on our behalf, he was working on the other's behalf. So Prabhupada, during this time, he continued traveling around the world. He did not stop, although he spent extra time in Juhu. But still, he continued touring the world. And he kept in constant touch with the leaders in Juhu, especially Giriraj at that time, Das Brahmachari, to keep on top of the situation, because we were in our early 20s and we had no practice functioning in India, so we were very vulnerable to be cheated. And yet Prabhupada himself, although this was on his mind in so many ways, and although he was doing so much in his own personal life, he was joyful. He was unaffected by this. Although he did it with great responsibility, it took a lot of his time and thought, along with everything else he was doing in the society. I'm just giving this as an example, because the Acharya sets the example. And he was not overcome by anxiety, because he always relied on the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna. And he always had complete faith in him. So while he gave his utmost effort to solve these problems that were cropping up and attention, as the Lord's servant, he realized ultimately it was the Lord's decision. The Lord was in charge. And he was just doing his bit, his part, and his part of the garden, as you could say. And in that way, he was not overcome, but he could remain feeling this ananda, his own nature. So it's a very instructive lesson to all of us that we're doing so many things, we have to act in so many ways to function personally and to allow the society to function and to do our service within the society and our service in the material world. But always beneath all that activity, we remain fixed in who we are and our actual constitutional position as spiritual beings. So that's the beginning of this Atmaram, personal joyfulness based on our identity as Atma, as spiritual beings. And then beyond that, yes, certainly we want to have successful relationships. Probably all of us have had the experience that nothing will disturb the mind so much as relationships that are problematic, especially close relationships, that we may try to forget it in so many ways, but it'll always be there eating away at our minds. So we want to study how can we have successful relationships within the family, with friends, with relatives, and with the body of devotees, Prabhupada's servants. And certainly one primary way we do that is by appreciating and respecting each and every devotee and encouraging them. Recently we were in Vrindavan. There was a ceremony to honor Jamuna Devi Dasi, who had passed away 1 year previously. And in the Krishna Balaram temple, we had devotees speak the whole morning in glorification of Jamuna Devi Dasi. And invariably they would say how she encouraged them, how this individual, no matter how so-called big or small they were, she would see some wonderful quality within them and fan that quality, just like one fans a spark. And it wasn't something done artificial in the way of flattery, that she wanted to get something from them, or she wanted to increase her own prestige. But it was an expression of her own heart, her own pure heart, that she saw devotees as very valuable. She saw each and every devotee as a special servant of Krishna, of Srila Prabhupada. And she felt from her heart appreciation for their service, for their endeavor, for their sincerity. And she expressed that in a way that they felt it was genuine. It wasn't something she was making up. And so they spoke like that, one after the other after the other. And how she herself was absorbed in the Lord's service, again, for the pleasure of Prabhupada, not for her own glorification. And this so deeply impacted people from throughout the world, of all nationalities, of all ages, especially the young people. As Jamuna Prabhu took special concern for the young people growing up in our movement, that they might take this gift that Prabhupada has given us, all of us, and carry it on purely. She didn't want to see it adulterated or contaminated or watered down in any way. She wanted to see it protected and carried on. And she saw that was to be the function of the young people. And they had so many difficulties growing up amongst neophyte devotees within Prabhupada's movement. And so she took special concern to guide them. And not that she guided them so much by instruction, but mostly she would invite them into her ashram and guide them by her personal example. How she was worshiping the deities, how she was chanting, how she was absorbed in Prabhupada's books, how she was relating to the devotees and offering incredible dishes for the pleasure of her Lord, Sri Sri Radhabana Bihari. And so in that way, people came forward during this ceremony in Vrindavan and just spoke their heart and how they had been touched and nourished by her and how much they missed her. So it was something very moving beyond the intellect to actually the heart of the matter. And the heart of the matter means cleansing the heart so that we can respect and appreciate other devotees with sincerity, and in that way our relationships with them will be strengthened. And we will feel nourished by that and joyful also. and very much supported in our service to Prabhupada. So it's a very beautiful process, and it requires a little seriousness and sincerity. And then this joyfulness naturally will emerge. Maybe there's some other points people would like to bring up. Okay. The question is that I was living in Sharanagati for many years, and Jamuna was our next door neighbor. I actually first met her in Mumbai itself in 1971 when I was 20 years old, and we kept touch over the years. So when she passed away, it was I had known her longer than I had known my parents. I realized I had known her longer than I had known anyone else who had passed away in this world. So what a vacuum it created. So there's so many pastimes. I could tell one from, this was in Calcutta. When I went to Calcutta, I was still not initiated. This was in August of 1971. And at that time, the temple situation was very difficult. It was very austere. Just a handful of devotees living in the midst of a very crazy city. There was a war between Bangladesh and Bangladesh war, and there were 1 million refugees in Calcutta. So it was a very strained time, and the women lived upstairs behind the bathroom in an attic area, and they were extremely austere. They would get up at 2:30 and bathe, and then come down to the temple room and chant their rounds before Mangal Arati. So I was living there, and because I was there, they woke me up at 2:30, and it was like I hadn't even been asleep. And they wrapped me up in a sari. I didn't know the beginning or the end or the middle. And I went down these stairs, and as I went down, I was wondering, you know, maybe I haven't brushed my hair, I was thinking. And just before I got to the temple room, there was just a candle in the room prior to the temple room, and I saw this person there with this effulgent smile, like a Colgate smile. And it was Jamuna. And she was looking right at me, and I was a mess. My sari, and Calcutta was so hot that the sari was in a ball when it dried, because it was so hot it could dry in a ball. So when they opened it up, every square inch had wrinkles. And this was the sari that they had wrap me up. And then I had forgotten to brush my hair, you know, and I was groggy as anything. So I'm just about to enter the temple room, and I see this effulgent smile. And it's Jamuna. And she looks right into my eyes and she says, "If you put some tilak on, you'll look even more beautiful." And I looked at her and I thought I was a cynical person, because I thought she was being sarcastic. And I could see that she was not at all cynical. She was saying it from her heart, with love, that if I put tilak on, I would be even more beautiful. So I did somehow put tilak on. And I sat in the temple room and chanted japa before Mangal Arati. So that is. But as her neighbors in Sharanagati, we would visit her regularly. She had a wonderful morning program with Mangal Arati and reading. Their readings were not like ours, but they would read and discuss. They would bring up points from the purport and have a discussion with whoever was there. So it was very sweet. And it was always fresh. She would bring up anecdotes that she personally was involved with Srila Prabhupada, stories from his pastimes. And she would also encourage each one of us to contribute. So we felt very much a part of this Bhagavatam experience, this discussion. It was very special. And then also she organized festivals for all the residents of Sharanagati. There was one festival called the Parrot Festival. She went to India. And with her, she took measurements for each and every one of the deities worshipped in each and every home of Sharanagati. And she got matching outfits made in Vrindavan with parrots as the theme. And then one day we all came together with our deities. We put them on one long altar. And each and every deity, we had Krishna Balaram, and we had so many Gornitais, and we had Radha Krishna. And they were all wearing these matching parrot outfits. And we spent the whole day together. And we were divided into groups. And each group had one aspect of bhakti. One had shravanam, hearing. One had kirtanam, chanting. One had smaranam, remembering. And they had to express something about that aspect of bhakti, either with plays or poems or mudras or whatever it was. And then we had a feast, several feasts together that day. So in that way, she united us with Krishna as the center in Sharanagati. It was a very glorious experience. Prabhupada said that once to her. She was serving him at John Lennon's estate, and Prabhupada had small deities that she was serving, and she also was cooking for him. And he said that she was at the level of Baba. I don't know if he said that about any other of his disciples. So that's very special. He very much appreciated her deity worship. He put her in charge of organizing the deity seva at the Krishna Balaram temple. So she was overseeing the making of the deities in Jayapur and gathering all their paraphernalia for worshipping them at the Krishna Balaram temple. Prabhupada had so much trust in her. We still have a few moments if anyone else has some points about this topic of envy. Other, yes. Well, we could take an example. Say that I'm envious of you because you're popular, and I feel I'm not popular. So for whatever reason, people are attracted to you, whether your personality or whatever it is. And I feel, gosh, you know, people aren't attracted to me. I'm all by myself. And so then I have to think. It is analytical, but I think it's helpful also. So whatever it is that makes you popular, that's your karma, whether it's your good looks, whether it's your personality, whether it's your influence. It's your karma that's come because of your past activities that has given you those facilities, abilities, talents in this life. And because of my past activities, I don't have that particular combination that makes me popular. Of course, ultimately it's from Krishna. Krishna is the most popular. And that tiny little bit is invested in you, perhaps more than me. Okay, so if I see it in that light, that it's your time, it's your what you're accruing from your past activities in this life and so many previous lifetimes, and that it's not meant for me. I have another, I'm also unique. I have other assets and deficits. And rather than begrudge you of your popularity, just as an example, and become upset about that, which only increases my own misery. That's very important. Envy only increases our own misery. It doesn't add to our joyfulness. And what we want is to be joyful. That's who we are. We want to be happy and joyful. And enviousness is the opposite of that. So thinking in that way, I can think, well, due to my past activities in this lifetime and so many previous lifetimes, that is not meant for me. So what is meant for me? You know, there's something I can do for Krishna's pleasure, for Prabhupada's pleasure, so let me do that. And become absorbed in that and become content with that. And why do I have to compare myself to you? That is completely unnecessary. That's what I was trying to explain, that if you study people from a cultured society, rather than the sense of competition, which leads to cheating and stealing and corruption and dissatisfaction, they cultivate contentment based on this knowledge of reincarnation and karma. So this, whatever it is, whatever body I'm in and whatever situation I'm in and whatever happens to me, whatever assets I have and don't have, this is not an accident, it's fate. Fate means it's from providence. Providence means it's from my previous activities. So this is part of the law of this universe. And rather than fight this law, I accept it and be happy within it and serve Krishna with love and devotion in my heart. And then be pleased by whatever assets I see in others and hope that they use them in Krishna's service and try to help them do that also. And then together, it's like, again, if we use this analogy of the garden, if we all have our individual plots we're cultivating and we're all doing that, then the massive garden can be so fruitful, provide so much for the Lord's pleasure and helping each other. There was one example I was very happy to hear. One temple I was at, they were very energetic in book distribution, and they did very, very well in the charts, right? They were very high up. And so the prayer by the leader was, next year, let us double our book distribution and come in last. Get it? In other words, everyone else more than doubled their book distribution. So book distribution just went up phenomenally. And although they doubled theirs, they were last. So they're hoping everyone else does so much better, more than doubles their book distribution. So this is the prayer of the devotee. I want to do my best, but I hope that you do, you know, even better for Krishna's pleasure. Because what we want to do is give pleasure to the Lord in the final analysis. Does that help at all? There are other points from the verse we could bring out, but if anyone has any other points about this Matsara Jvara, those who are suffering from the fever of envy. So the question is that we gave the example of Devaki having six sons, these six enemies of kam, krodh, you know, lust, anger, greed, envy, madness, illusion. So Devaki lamented the loss of her sons. So how would the Acharyas explain that? So also we can see that when Asvatthama was killed on the battlefield, Arjuna was so overwhelmed with lamentation. And Prabhupada explains that it's natural. I mean, it would be heartless for a mother to lose her children or a father to lose his son and not feel overcome by sadness. But they understand on a higher level that this is temporary, this is ordained by the Lord. So it's not that we're heartless people, that we think, oh, they're not their bodies, it doesn't matter. That would be very unnatural and a cause of great turmoil within us being unnatural. Because we're living on two planes always in this world. We're living on this higher plane, what we're trying to explain, that we're Atmarama. We're humble, contented servants of the Lord, absorbed in our seva for his pleasure. But we're also on another plane where we have these material bodies, we have these material minds. And so we must recognize that and serve in whatever capacity we can according to our body and mind. Just like in the previous verse, this Vaivaswata Manu was speaking about, just as a puppeteer controls his dancing dolls and a husband controls his wife, so your lordship controls all the living entities. So you could say, on one section, in one level, the husband and the wife are Atmaram, whereas the question of the husband and wife controlling the wife. And Prabhupada also mentions that in the purport. But then we're also on this level where we're in this male or female body and we have certain responsibilities and duties and natural tendencies. And so we don't ignore that. So similarly, when we lose a child, we don't ignore the remorse that wells up in our heart as a result of that. That would be artificial and unbeneficial. Is that okay? All right, so I think maybe it's about time. Is this when we stop? Yeah? Okay. Thank you so much for your attention. All glories to His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada.